From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, July 21st, 2017. And on this day, school districts in Maine are thinking about making some big changes to how they do summer school. And as part of our series on disappearing jobs, we'll meet a bell maker. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
A hearing for a Maine man who claims he was wrongfully convicted of murder 25 years ago has been postponed until October. As Patty White reports, the Cumberland County Unified Criminal Court was scheduled to consider Anthony Sanborn's case next week.
Justice Joyce Wheeler postponed the hearing after meeting with state prosecutors and defense attorneys Thursday. According to the Maine Attorney General's office, a number of outstanding motions must be decided before the case can proceed. The hearing will determine whether Anthony Sanborn's 1992 murder conviction should be dismissed. Sanborn was found guilty in the slaying of 16-year-old Jessica Briggs on a Portland pier. A key witness in the original trial who claimed she witnessed Sanborn kill Briggs recanted her testimony in a hearing this spring. The witness also said police detectives threatened her and told her what to say. That prompted Justice Wheeler to grant Sanborn bail. He'll remain free as he awaits a decision on his fate. The Maine Attorney General's office denies that it mishandled the case. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Summer school. It's long been a dreaded rite of passage for students who are falling behind. Movies have been made about it. Some districts now refuse to even call it summer school because of the stigma. But now some schools are finding that some of the traditional ways they've approached programs in the past aren't working, especially for younger kids. And as Robbie Feinberg reports, that's forced some districts to make changes.
For the Wiscasset School Department, the challenge of helping at-risk elementary school students over the summer was brought into focus last year when a heat wave left kids sweltering.
Yeah, they were like dying on the vine there a few times because it was incredibly hot last summer.
Curriculum Director Patricia Watts says as temperatures approached triple digits, students stopped showing up.
I visited a couple times and it was very hot and... You know, and we, you know, kids just wanted to be playing and they didn't want to be in school. And
with some students attending summer school maybe once or twice a week, Watts says the district found that many students' academic scores stalled or even went backwards after the summer program. And this year, she decided the program just didn't make sense.
We decided that, you know, it's probably in the best interest that we put those monies into our school year. And work with our specialists in improving the reading and math.
Experts have long known that summer learning is important to help students maintain their skills or catch up with peers. A 2015 study from the University of Southern Maine found that students, particularly those from low-income households, saw large drops in their reading and math scores over the summer. Researchers say summer programs can help narrow that gap. But the effectiveness of many summer programs hasn't been studied much until recently. Catherine Augustine of the nonprofit RAND Corporation says her research has found that it's worth it to invest in summer learning. At the elementary level, she says, summer programs need certain aspects for academic success. That starts with getting kids to actually show up for an extended period of time.
That sounds like a simple ingredient, but it's actually hard to achieve.
Augustine says there's no one way to get more students to attend summer school. Air conditioning helps, but not all schools have it. What is important, she says, is for districts to invest in these programs. That means hiring knowledgeable teachers who offer quality lessons. But reaching these goals and getting kids to show up has been difficult for some districts.
We had a middle school principal, and he's still there, and he said, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Why put kids back in an environment where they failed, only to struggle again?
Patrick Carson is with the Oxford Hills School District in South Paris. He and other staff say students weren't seeing success in the traditional summer school model. So about 6 years ago, the district overhauled its summer program. Instead of a classroom, some students now come here.
See, some of the chickens got out all if the chicken got out. Oh, we gotta shoot the chicken again.
This is Robert's Farm Preserve in Norway. About 40 middle schoolers come here for 3 weeks during the summer. And it's about the furthest thing from a classroom that you could imagine. Part of the day's focus is on recreation, swimming, and kayaking. The rest of the time, students learn about math, science, and reading through activities like searching for invasive plants and building greenhouses.
This one is calm.
Student Destiny Davis grabs a large hen and gently places it into a wooden coop.
You want to go in, baby girl?
Much easier, it gets picked up and then squirmed. Like yeah. That.
She says she likes how different this is from regular school.
More activities to do. Like, it's hard to explain. It's much more fun. We do activities, like, we straight off the bat.
Take a subject like literacy. On this day, students are baking zucchini bread using the vegetables they picked directly from the farm. But as part of the activity, teacher Jen Chafin pulls aside a few kids. She shows them a note-taking technique and tells them to record the baking process. Then they'll use the notes to write a cookbook and newsletter later.
So that's your challenge for today. So if you need some more paper, you can get some out of the iPad closet.
Staff like what they're seeing. Last year, the average attendance rate here was nearly 95%. And the school says more than 30% of students saw their reading levels go up. Researcher Catherine Augustine says summer school doesn't need to be as drastically different as something like Robert's Farm Preserve. But she says if schools focus on getting good teachers and making kids feel welcome, students could find that summer school is something to look forward to, not dread. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Education reporting on Maine Public Radio is supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. Church bells still summon the faithful to the start of worship. And you can still hear them ring out on special occasions in certain town squares. But these days, the dulcet tones of handmade bells and chimes are increasingly drowned out by electronic gadgets. As Jennifer Mitchell reports in our latest installment of Once Upon a Job, there is one man in Maine who staked his livelihood on the vanishing craft of bell making.
Dick Fisher has been making bells for almost 50 years now.
There was no magic moment when I said, I'm going to make bells.
But at an early age, he did know that he was attracted to the more traditional ways of life.
I grew up on South Shore, Massachusetts, and I used to go into Boston a lot. And there was always you'd see three or four people with push carts, one guy selling chestnuts, another guy, you know, grinding a hurdy-gurdy.
That seemed appealing to Fisher, who at 24 was still trying to figure out what to do with his life. He'd always liked to work with his hands, and he was fond of some bells his mother had brought back from China. So he got the idea of hammering and welding pieces of steel into simple handmade bells for sale. Then he nailed together a pushcart, got himself a peddler's license, and spent the summer of 1970 making and selling the little steel bells to passersby in Copley Square.
As time went on, I figured out that there was limitations to the hammered steel bells. It kind of sounded like cowbells, kind of funky. So I decided I wanted to learn casting to make bronze bells.
Bronze could make more beautiful tones, and that was important to Fisher. He began studying with a bell maker and found he had both an interest and an aptitude for the craft. He began selling his bells at craft shows, and in 1985, he and his wife Cindy moved to Maine, where they opened a foundry. Here at U.S. Bells in Prospect Harbor, what started as a simple peddler's cart has grown into a sizable and noisy workshop where Fisher casts everything from tiny tinkling chimes to big deep-voiced bells that can be heard across many acres. He's also been called upon to make important historical replicas, including one of what's often referred to as Canada's Liberty Bell, given in goodwill to the people of Prince Edward Island, where it now hangs over the harbor at Charlottetown. The original, something of a sore spot with some Canadians, hangs in Gouldsboro, Maine.
See,
See that tongs leaning on the wall over there?
These days, Fisher has a pair of apprentices who tend the noisy furnace and pour the liquid bronze into the molds.
It's going to have, when it's full, about 100 pounds of bronze. I'll melt it, and the bronze will be up to about 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit.
The process, says Fisher, is fairly basic. He sketches a design, then makes a wooden template around which a special sand mixture is packed to form a mold into which the liquid bronze is then poured. When cool, the mold is open, the sand is tapped out, and with it comes a rough bell that will be finessed and polished.
If we get one that doesn't sound good, it never turns into a production pattern. And that's happened.
Like all bell makers, Fisher has relied on knowledge that's been shared across generations, and he's traveled as far away as Japan to learn specific bell-making techniques. But as bells are replaced by other things, there are fewer craftspeople to share the skill. This year, one of the world's oldest bell foundries closed its doors after nearly 500 years. Citing a decline in the need for old-fashioned bells, the Whitechapel Bell Foundry in London went silent. Fortunately, though, one of the most recognized and most loved bells it ever produced, Big Ben, still chimes regular as clockwork on the hour. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, July 21st, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.